the crowded booths or the big kids in their costumes. I did like my costume and the pink smell near the cotton candy. And I did want to win the cake. We moved in a circle. 30, 29, 28. The chalk beginning to smudge as we went. The song was fast, and people were loud. A bigger kid behind me in a Snoopy costume stepped on the back of my shoe, and I almost fell down. When the music stopped, kids jostled and pushed to stand on a number. I was squarely atop the number 10. I remember that because when the volunteer mom felt around in a glass fishbowl and withdrew a scrap of paper, unfolded it, and called out a number, that was the number she called. She waved me over to a long table where cakes were displayed and told me to pick one. I wanted a cake, but I didn't know there would be more than one to choose from. There were too many, and I couldn't decide, and my eyes filled with tears. It was too much, all of it already. And that's when I saw my mother crossing the blacktop. Usually, Big Nora picked me up from school. On the days that Jillian did, it was almost always from aftercare when it was dark. But here she was, even though the sun was right above me in the slate autumn sky. It was such a relief to see her. It softened the pressure that was building inside me as I stood on the blacktop, unable to choose. So I left the cake table and ran to her, my butterfly wings spread wide. "Too many cakes," I said, and those were the last words I spoke for a long time. 10 years have passed since I regained my voice. It was Jillian who helped me find it. Now, the last day of August 2021, I'm on the metro, bleary-eyed and jet-lagged, cutting beneath Paris. My brain understands that I'm in a different time zone, but my body doesn't. Not yet. Yesterday, back home in California, where I used to live, I boarded a plane at 6 in the evening. When we landed, the flight attendant informed us that it was 2 in the afternoon. The magnitude of the disorientation that results from moving one's body at an unnatural speed across space and time cannot be overstated. My brain knows that I can't fall asleep, because that would mean I'll miss my stop. But my body insists that I close my eyes. I lean my head against the wall of the metro train. It's hard and cold, and most likely not particularly clean. But what a relief to rest. When I close my eyes, there's Jillian, smiling at me. The warm weight of her hand upon my head. Then comes a bark of a cough, and quick as a reflex, I press the metal piece of my mask across the bridge of my nose. The cougher is a police officer, white, in his 60s, I'd guess, wearing all the regular parts of a police officer's uniform. The jacket, the pants, the boots, and the cap, the bonnet de police, a funny name for Americans, for whom bonnets are associated with characters like Little Bo Peep, charming little feckless girls, plus a mask, black to match the cap. Is the mask part of the uniform now? Or is he required to provide his own? This is the sort of thing that interests me. Or that used to interest me, I should say. Before the virus and the shutdown, I might have asked him about it. Of course, back when I would have been interested, when I might have asked. Back then, no one was wearing masks. He's seen me staring, which I hadn't meant to do, but which happens when I get lost in detail. He raises a gloved hand, in greeting, to apologize for coughing. I don't know which. Latex gloves. Black. The virus can't be transmitted through non-porous objects the way the flu can. That's one of the things we've learned. Just over 1.5 years ago, when the virus was new, before we knew all the things we know now, television doctors demonstrated how to spray down groceries, how to use antibacterial wipes on hard surfaces, how to properly wash our hands, singing the ABC song.